Hi guys, Alicia Oxy from True Detective, Life Sentence, Ballers, Bad Sister.
Hello, Brian, Nico, Dustin, Mike. I'm really loving that everybody is revisiting season one since this season is banging. What can I tell you? Season one, we shot out of order. I shot that hotel room scene first with all those crazy random stuffed animals. And as a huge fan of Matthew McConaughey, I really had to refrain from saying, all right, all right, all right, after every single take. No, I did that initially when I first met him. I was so nervous, but it was just him and I in a hotel room for about 12 hours, and it was pretty rad. By the middle of the day, we were doing some really cool stuff, and I'll give you one little fun thing that was behind the scenes. They were getting ready to move on to Matthew's coverage. They started with my coverage. Coverage is when they like literally are covering you as the actor. So they were going over Matthew, through the window, all these cool shots. And I had this moment and I was disappointed. I was like, oh shit, I thought of this cool idea I wanted to do. And I remember Carrie, the director, was like, wait, what? Is everything cool? And I was like, no, I just wish I would have taken one of the pills. You know, like Lucy would be in the midst of probably popping one herself. He's like, move the cameras back. And I remember thinking, oh God, I just took the cameras back. But I'll tell you what, that's the take that they used. So, fun little behind the scenes. It was a rad project. Also, my team didn't want me to initially do it. Can you believe that? They had no idea. Nobody had any idea. Now everybody knows what True Detective is, but at that time when I auditioned, they had no idea. So, what I'll say is, don't go out there. Sayonara.
They've conquered the big screen. Now, get ready for the spin-off sure to send chills down your spine. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin in Don't Go Out There, the series.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There podcast. Just want to thank all our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. Last week, we wrapped up The Walking Dead Season 1, Dustin's Pick. Great, great series. Really enjoyed it. And this week, we are kicking off Brian's series. I'm going to let him announce it and why he picked it. Go ahead, brother.
Real quick, before you do that, I would like to take this time. You said last week we wrapped up Season 1 of The Walking Dead. Brian, where are you at in that show as it stands right now?
I am right now on the season finale of the entire show. Season 11, episode 23, I think it is.
God damn. There's 23 episodes in this last season?
Episode 24.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last two seasons have 22 and 24.
Yeah. But I just thought that's phenomenal. Like, we just started that show, 3 weeks ago for the first time. And now he's watched 11. He's done nothing else. His kids have been neglected. His wife has been untouched. He's turned Brian into the Walking Dead beat. What the hell?
Hey-o. Now that's a dad joke I can appreciate. Okay, so shifting focus here. We're going to do 2014's first season of True Detective. It's an anthology series, so each season is different.
I think the next one has Rachel McAdams and Colin Farrell in it, if I'm not mistaken. And the only one that I have seen, I have not seen three or the fourth season. But regardless, I said this before, maybe you didn't listen, and that's okay. But like Nico was with Haunting of Hill House, this is my favorite season of television I've ever watched. You know, at first I thought I binged it during COVID, but actually upon further review, I think we were just off work for a few days because of an ice storm. I don't really remember. That was a long time ago. But regardless, this show stuck with me after I watched it. I dreamed about it. It really bothered me. It feels real. If you've heard the show, you've heard me say that same thing before. If it feels real to me, it bothers me in a lot of cases because it feels like true crime. And, you know, enough can't be said, though, about Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey. Actually, this is the show that let me know just how good of an actor Matthew actually was. And I am excited to get into it. I'm excited that you guys get to watch it because you haven't seen it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'll go next. This was a series that I've heard very good things about. Brian's mentioned to me in the past several times how much he likes this series, you know, this particular season. Spoke very highly of it, and I was looking forward to it because I am a true crime fan. I like Woody Harrelson. I'm a big Matthew McConaughey fan. And I was looking at when this series came out, like, what a historic run this guy was on. Freaking Dallas Buyers Club, this, Interstellar, all within, like, 2013 and 14. That's insane. Like,
that's true.
That's a legendary run. He's one of my favorite actors, if not my favorite. Like, We Are Marshall is my favorite football movie. It was my favorite sports movie until The Iron Claw came out. So that one kind of overtook it. But We Are Marshall is still my favorite football movie. Frailty, that was my birthday pick a couple years ago. Love that one. All of, you know, what I just named. I think he's a really good actor. And he's my favorite part of this series. And I touched on that in our notes. I think he's phenomenal. And I pulled a Brian on this one. Like, I kind of mentioned it on our episode last week. This might be one I just go ahead and binge. And I did Sunday morning after Dustin, you know, he stayed with me this past weekend to go to the FSU spring game. After Dustin left, you know, I went ahead and watched the whole season. And
that had nothing to do with because you guys were hungover by any means, right? I mean,
I wasn't hungover Sunday. I was good Sunday. Saturday is a different story. But
I don't get hangovers, buddy.
This is really good, and I'm excited to. I watched the entire series. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great, and I'm looking forward to rewatching it already. I don't know if it's my favorite yet, but I'm a big true crime fan, and it's right up there with Hill House. So, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I had never seen this either, Nico. What you just said about Matthew McConaughey, yeah, he's great. But that's how I feel about Woody Harrelson. He's one of my top five favorite actors. I've got the White Man Can't Jump movie poster hanging up in my living room. Top five movie to me, as is Kingpin, Natural Born Killers, which I plan to pick on this show eventually. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I just want to shout that one out because Martin McDonagh is probably my favorite director. But anyway, I'd never seen this show and I'd heard it was really good, but I don't, you know, I'm doing this one just like I did Haunting of Hill House. I've only watched these first two episodes. These first two episodes are really good. They didn't wow me. Nothing happened really to where I'm like drawn in, but they were so captivating because of how well acted they were, how well written they were. And so it's very good television. So I'm excited to see how the season plays out.
Yeah, this is absolutely written like one big long movie, you know, where I feel like Hill House was written with each episode in mind. And, you know, we went into that pretty in depth with it separating an episode for each kid and that sort of thing. I feel like that this is not like that. I feel like that this is three acts of a very long movie. Was it 10 episodes? So about 10 hours, a little over 10 hour movie. And that's kind of how I would, I don't know, explain that. Does that make sense? What do you think, Nico?
No, I agree. I hate to use the old cliche onion line, but there's a lot of layers to this series and a lot of character development, a lot of character reveals in it. And yeah, it was really good. It was really good. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
All right. Well, I am actually going to do scene by scene for this one. Anybody got anything else before we get started?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So we open up seeing two figures emerging from a burning plot of land, and we immediately fast forward to present day 2012. where Marty Hart, a former detective, is being interviewed by detectives Gibbo and Papagna. He's asked about and describes his former partner, Russ Cole, as we then flash to Cole himself being interviewed separately as well. Cole lights up a heater and is told that he can't smoke in there, to which he replies, "Hey, assholes, you want to hear about this or not?" They're both asked if their relationship and the details of a particular murder investigation. We flash forward to, or flash backward, I guess, to 1995, and Marty and Rust arrive at a scene where a woman's dead body has been found. She had been crowned with deer antlers and bound to a tree in a kneeling position, surrounded by numerous twig and Blair Witch-like sculptures. Rust takes notes in his ledger while we hear the voiceover of Marty in his 2012 interview telling us that that's why they call him the tax man, and how intelligent he was, and that Marty would describe himself as a regular-ass dude with a big-ass dick. Rust decides that the victim was a sex worker and continued to describe her as a paraphiliac love map. And Marty tells Rust he is jumping to the conclusions and then invites him to dinner. Rust then says he's going to have a drink to the 2012 detectives. And that's it. What do you think, Nico?
All right. Something I should have said before we started this was this was an incredibly hard show to take notes on.
Facts.
Brian, he did see my scene. He even admitted, like, I don't know what the hell I would say. So I hope I do this show justice. At least these first two episodes, maybe I'll get a little better in the next three and four, you know, five and six. But this is a tough one to take notes on just because there's so much character development, dialogue scenes.
Right.
You're learning stuff, but it's really good. But starting off, I'm not going to watch it every episode, but the intro is definitely groovy as hell and a fun way to start the show off. Woody Harrelson, charming as always. Matthew as Rust, spoiler, is absolutely incredible in this series. It's amazing to me how he pulls off both of these different looks, characters in this one season. Horrific, ritualistic first death in the series. And I know this bothers Brian because of the realism, and I agree with him. But that's what makes true crime so horrifying and fascinating to me. I like the exploration of these crazy, sadistic people's minds. Marty portrays the more traditional type of detective, while Russ comes across as the obsessive, OCD, attention-to-detail type detective. Marty, he cracks me up with this, "I'm a regular type dude with a big ass dick" line that made me laugh out loud, honestly. Rust lives in the extreme version of a typical single guy place that catches hell online. My man didn't even have the one recliner and television in the living room. It was just a mattress on the damn floor. My man would have got roasted on Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter. Rust is extremely impressed with how much he notices, and he leaves Marty in the dust from an observational standpoint at the crime scene. I do agree, Russ, this is a weird time to invite you over to dinner. And Russ, he cracked me up with his, "Aight." And this is the last thing I got, Dustin. I love Russ' line delivery on why he needs a drink. Man was going through a lot. It's a really good opening set of scenes.
Yeah, pretty cool opening credits, in my opinion. Very artistic, I like the way it was done. I will say I don't love the theme choice. I don't know. It was a little bit too upbeat, but it was fine, I guess. Great tone to the opening scene, just dark, sounds of nature, fire, solid ingredients. Then we see one of my goats, like I mentioned, Woody Harrelson. I'm already sold on this show. Then we get McConaughey, and man, does he know how to commit to a role. Like, he looks almost unrecognizable there. Pretty standard effective stuff, or detective stuff, early on. Until we see WWE's Valhalla tied up naked to a tree. Michael Cole would be happy to see she's wearing the antlers. At least two of our listeners will get that. Classic Woody Harrelson delivery when he said, "I'm just a regular type dude with a big-ass dick." Like, that line fits him so perfectly in the majority of his roles. I laughed as well, Nico. Then another of his lines hits home with me. "I tell you guys, a man past a certain age without a family can be a bad thing. I got to find me a wife, man, soon. My DMs are open." big piece of the puzzle revealed when we find out that Rust has a daughter. It adds depth to his character and makes you want to know what happened and why he lives like this with no furniture. Also explains why he shows up drunk in the next scene. He's going through a lot, like Nico said. It's a solid open, and I'm heavily invested.
Yeah, this is just a – I want to say it's dark because, to me, it's – I guess when I think of dark, I think of American Horror Story, and I have not seen a single episode of American Horror Story, which I know that's going to change coming up here. But I feel like this is just a very dark season, and there's not a lot of upbeat anything. Anyway, okay, we'll start next set of scenes. Russ arrives to Marty's looking like Dustin on a Saturday morning, and we flash back to 2 days earlier in the car. Marty asks Russ why he has a cross in his apartment and if he's not Christian, to which Marty says he isn't, and says people shouldn't talk about this type of shit at work and that he's a pessimist and bad at parties. Marty replies, but let me tell you, you aren't great outside of parties either, which made me laugh. Regrets asking and then begs him to shut the fuck up. I felt that one. Back at the station, Marty tells the captain Rust is smart and gets to sign the press conference. We skip ahead some to Rust drinking and asking some sex workers some questions at a truck stop bar and ask for some Quaaludes. Marty arrives home to his two sleeping daughters and sips on a nightcap as we see his wife, Maggie, finding him the next morning on the recliner. He brushes off her attempts at a conversation and gets ready for work, where he tells the secretary he wants his coffee like her, strong and black. Rusty informs him that the body is identified as Dora Lang, and toxicology found traces of LSD and crystal. Emerging from the morgue, Rust and Marty deduce the evidence, and Rust points out that the town is like a memory of a town, to which Marty asks him to stop saying odd shit, which may be my favorite line in the entire season, the entire series, is just stop saying odd shit. That just made me laugh more than anything, probably. The duo do some interviews around Erath, a town near where Lang's body was found, and find some details about the stick figures from a church reverend and meet with Sheriff Tate about another missing 10-year-old Fontenot girl named Marie and another incident with a girl claiming to be chased by a green-eared spaghetti monster. I'm sure she's from the Spaghetti Death House from our 7 interview. our 7 review. We quickly jump back to the 2012 interview where Russ asks, nay, demands the interviewers go get him an old Milwaukee because it's Thursday past noon and he drinks on Thursday's afternoon and they don't get to mess that up. Another time jump back to 1995 after a press conference. The two visit Dora Lang's ex-husband, Charlie, in prison. He tells them that he hasn't heard from her since she didn't make no sense, quote unquote, like she could duck hunt with a rake and that she could become a nun and has met a king. And the next set of scenes is the ending of this episode. Go ahead, Nico.
All right. Contrary to what I said a minute ago, I do actually have a decent amount of notes on this, but after this, it's not that much. But picking up from my last statement, just seeing his face as Marty opens the door, you can tell Russ has had a hell of a day. And a part of me agrees with Russ. Religion and politics aren't necessarily the best subjects to talk about at work. It can just get kind of testy. But I also feel where Marty is coming from. You've been partners for 3 months and bro won't open up at all. I feel like that definitely would be kind of weird. I kind of have a coworker like that. He's been at the job for over a year and we don't know much about him. But hey, he's a good worker. I've seen online how the first couple episodes are slow. And I'm sure most are alluding to these conversation dialogue scenes, but personally, I love them. Most likely because I like both actors so much. They have great on-screen chemistry. It's almost like they could be brothers. Damn, Russ is going through it. Man just downed that whole bottle of cough syrup. That's what I'm assuming it is. Like nothing. Great shot of his face where you can visibly see the effects of the medicine and his emotions weighing on him. Marty gives me another laugh when he tells Kathleen he wants his coffee black and strong just like her. I remember being in fifth grade, my teacher, Mr. Perry, asked me to go get him some coffee, and I said, how do you want it? He said, black and plain, just like my wife, and I laughed my butt off. I was like, yes, sir. I love the coroner scene and Russ' attention to detail to the horns, the rose bush. I can't compliment Matthew enough in this, which I will continue to do for another 7 episodes. Russ seeing that little girl by the light pole, it gave me an empty feeling in my stomach. I hate seeing little kids alone, so vulnerable and in so much danger. It's horrific. I like this exchange between Russ and the minister giving hindsight of what the wooden symbols possibly meant. Matthew, he cracks me up demanding a burger and beer from the detectives because, like you said, Brian, it's my off day and they ain't ruining that for him. Charlie, portrayed by Brad Carter, he portrays this Louisiana inmate so perfectly. He's got a great speaking cadence, and I think he nails the accent of that bayou sound. Go ahead, Dustin. That's all I got.
Yeah, so Russ looks like absolute shit when he shows up at Marty's house. Man has been through it. And then in the car ride, Rust is on some other shit, man. The world is one big gutter, and he contemplates allowing his own crucifixion. Looks like he's moved on to liquor from liquor to some drugs, possibly the marijuanas, possibly some LSD. It's some real bleak and depressing shit there. And then you see the wheels spin in Rust's head when they pass the billboard. I think that's a nice subtle touch. I don't know if that particular missing person comes back into play later, but it just shows that even though he's on some depressive shit, he's always paying attention to things that could mean something. We see Kevin Dunn, the good Kevin Dunn, not the WWE pervert. Shout out to Small Soldiers, one of my favorite movies as a kid. like that he's in this show. They do a good job with Marty's home life, showing that he's not the most involved at home. But he does seem to love his wife and kids, but he's just not there, really. We get a lot of standard police show slash movie stuff here. Nothing groundbreaking, but it's all very well done. And then when we get to the church, we see my guy Lester from The Wire. Shout out to one of the best shows ever made. That was cool. And then we get a look at the guys interviewing Rust when he sees when he sends one of them out for beer. We see that one of them is Brother Malzone from The Wire. Nice. Two Wire guys. Love it. I thought there was an incredible line here when he says she could duck hunt with a rake. That's a great way to describe how high someone is. That was awesome. Pretty good set of scenes. Just a lot of standard police stuff, though.
Yeah, for sure. All right, this is the ending. Back in the 2012 interview, Rust receives his request of beer, to which he immediately cracks open and drinks one. The detectives press Rust on the details of his case, and he lets them know that he is well aware of it resembling a recent murder scene, something they've kept out of the papers. In Marty's interview, he's asked to elaborate on the dinner, to which Cole showed up drunk, and we flash back to that night where Marty is berating him for showing up drunk. Marty arranges for him to leave after forgiving Rusty, but he stays after chatting with Maggie, where he tells Maggie his two-year-old daughter died years ago, the grief from which ended his marriage, and we find out the relationship went bad after 7 years of working and how they went bad in 2002. Back in the station, Cole gets a little bit of a dust-up with a co-worker before learning Marie Fontenot was the daughter of LSU pitcher Danny. Then they are introduced to Reverend Billy Tuttle, a minister from powerful, wealthy local family, and the first cousin of the state's governor, Eddie. Tuttle mentions creating a task force to investigate crimes with anti-Christian connotations, suggesting that Lang's murder is one. Marty's attention is caught quickly by Lisa Tragnetti, and he immediately follows her out, making it very obvious that the two are hiding something. Marty and Russ return back to Erath, where they visit Marie Fontenot's family, most notably a handicapped Danny. During the interview, Rust notices something out back and finds a Blair Witch twig sculpture similar to those at the crime scene. Flashing back once again to the 2012 interview, Cole asks if they want to hear about the hero shot where they carried the kids out and asks details about Lake Charles' case, to which the detectives leave the room and bring in a folder with a nude woman hanging from the bridge and question how it could be the same guy if they caught him in 1995. Rust tells them to start asking the right fucking questions, and that's the end of the episode.
All right, yeah, I don't have a lot on this, but I can immediately tell Maggie is attracted to Rust. And I can't blame her. Matthew is a handsome fella. Pause me. I don't care. Maggie, soon as Marty walks out, is eye fucking Rust so hard. Real mood killer when Rust reveals the horrible news of his daughter's death and divorce. I don't hold grudges. That's the shit that leads to cancer. I need to put that on a fortune cookie for my man Brian. All love, of course, brother.
I gotta be full of cancer already.
Insert Leo meme pointing at the TV scene. Gracie, I think it's how you say his name. That's the guy from The Iron Claw, speaking of that. A movie I'd love to review someday, but trying to figure out how it's horror is the tough part. No clue how Russ knew that the wood symbol was in the playhouse, but I'll allow it because I think his character is so intriguing. We get a great end with Russ telling the other detective to start asking the right fucking questions as he smokes another cigarette and drinking out the flask. I really like the first episode. That's all I got, Dustin.
All right, the dinner. Yikes. Kids are prodding around and about Russ shooting his gun. That's not something you do, girls. Like, you never ask a cop or a military person if they've killed someone. Woof. Then Marty's wife brings up Russ' failed marriage, and we hear that his daughter died. I felt for the man. That is rough and uncomfortable. Then you can see the irritation in Marty's face when Russ said he wasn't leaving. I thought that was really good stuff. Harrelson just knows how to give that look like you got to be shitting me.
Yep.
Then we see Reverend Tuttle, or as I know him better as, Ranch Wilder, voice of the Angels. Great cast in this show, man. Which, speaking of Angels in the outfield, McConaughey also was in that movie, played Ben Williams, outfielder. Great overhead shot of rural Louisiana. That's easy for me to say. When Rust and Marty pull up to the Fontenot's place, does a great job of setting the scene for the the town they're in. Great scene when Rust discovers the devil catcher on the floor in the shack around back. I like how dramatically that was shot, not revealing it first and making you wonder what he saw on the floor. That was good. It could have just showed it. Great drama to end the episode on when they show the pic of the victim and establish that they may have got the wrong guy in 95 or that Rust is a potential suspect. This is a very solid episode. I'm all the way in.
Absolutely. Before we jump into the next one, do you guys have any fun facts, Dustin? Nico?
No, I do not, actually.
I'll share some at the end of the second one, just I found interesting, but nothing right now.
Okay, I've got a couple on this, just this particular episode. According to the show's creator, Nick Pizzolatto, Matthew McConaughey has this incredibly complicated chart of where Rust Cole is emotionally and physically at every beat of those 17 years. Rust says that he remembers the day they found the dead body because it was the day of his daughter's birthday, January 3rd, and that's the same day as Matthew McConaughey's daughter, Vida, was born in 2010. All right, anything else before we jump into episode two?
Good episode. Right. I liked it.
All right. We open back in the 2012 interview with Rust. By this time, he's had a few and starts drifting some, but Detectives Gilbo and Papagne getting back on the 95 case, asking about the sculpture they found in Marie Fontenot's playhouse. We jump to 95 at the station with the figure sitting on Rust's desk. The duo question Dora Lang's mother, who says that Dora had been a regularly attending church before her death. Rust clocks a picture of Dora surrounded by many men on horseback wearing masks. Flashing back to 2012, Marty says Rust's problem was that he needed things he could not admit to, and then continues on with the case where the two meet with Carla, a friend of Dora's, who said she thought that Dora was high on something last time that they talked and corroborated the church story from her mother right before telling them that she'd been staying at a place down south. After a montage and narration of the monotony of working a case, the two are back in the car where Rust finally tells Marty about his ex-wife and child. We flash back to the 2012 interview where Rust tells more about his history and relationships for a quick jaunt, and we are back to 95, where Marty is in the bar with coworkers talking about a girl sticking a finger up his ass, while in 2012, the narration tells the interviewing detectives that he needs to decompress before going home to his family and kids.
One of the aspects I like most about this show is how much it feels like Bayou Louisiana. The show was originally going to be in Arkansas, but what a great choice to go with Louisiana. The people, the visuals, the depiction of poor Southern folk, I think it was very well executed. Shout out to Tess Harper. I think she does fantastic as Miss Kelly. She nails the older Southern lady in this interview scene. Men don't air their bullshit to the world because no one cares, a line said by Marty about his dad. It's a cynical way of viewing it, but I think if you ask 10 guys, I think 9 of them would say that they agree with it. Beautiful visuals of the swamp as Russ and Marty continue to chat. Really powerful moment, Russ revealing to Marty about his daughter's tragic death as well. I really like that that scene. Russ, the age character, is so familiar to my hometown. Work a few days and drink the rest of the time. I'm not encouraging it, but it's relatable to back home. And Marty, this man is insane. I never reveal I like getting a finger put in my ass. Relax, brother. But hey, I'm not going to kink shame you. Do what you want to do. That's all I got, Dustin. Go ahead.
All right. I love how the episode picks right back up with Russ talking to the detectives about finding the stick statue. I thought, you know, just dropping us right back in is nice. They also give you a nice recap before the episode starts of the first episode. That was cool. Yes. Then we see Dora's mom, and it's Jesse's mom from Breaking Bad. This woman has a tendency to raise kids who get mixed up in bad lives. In real life, Tess Harper has no kids. I don't know, man. Maybe that's for the best, because Jesse and Dora, sheesh. In the car again here, I love the dynamic between Rust and Marty. Two completely different perspectives trying to piece together the puzzle. That was brilliant to me. Then we hear what happened to Rust's kid, and it explains a lot about his character. Completely understand why he's an alcoholic who doesn't want to be around families. This is just a solid episode solid open to this episode as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, the next set of scenes. Pretty intoxicated, Marty gives Lisa Tragnetti a call, asking if he can stop by. And boy, does he. She handcuffs him to the bar and proceeds to ride him like Seabiscuit. Shout out, Meet the Fockers. We cut to Rusty driving while seeing drug-intoxicated lights that look like Tron that we learned from the voiceover were from his time in the HIDT. And due to that drug use during his undercover days, he admits he has regular hallucinations. Rust meets up with Lucy, the sex worker from the bar, played by Alicia, who was kind enough to have done our intro for us. She's the one he met at the bar last episode and buys some Quaaludes from her. She offers some booty, but he turns her down and starts questioning her. She tells him about a brothel called The Ranch, and he puts two and two together about it being the same place Dora was telling Carla about. We cut back to Marty and Lisa, and after some small talk, Marty gets jealous about her having dates, which leads to an argument between the two about him getting his cake and eating it too. The next morning, Russ tells Marty about the ranch and tells him he'd better wash up because he smells like pussy. This offends him, and tensions run high between the two. The two decides to track down the ranch, and at their first stop, aren't getting any answers they want from two mechanics. And Russ leaves Marty in the car and beats the absolute fuck out of them, while a voiceover of Marty tells the detectives that Russ had some moves and an eye for people's weaknesses. Russ returns to the car with the address, and the two head to the ranch.
All right. Listen, I don't encourage cheating at all, but whew, Alexander Daddario is smoking hot. But his view that cheating is good for the family, that was some outrageous talk by Marty. You need to relax, brother. This gal is straight up throwing the coochie at Rust here. Seriously, though, she does a great job portraying this character. Marty's lying his jealous ass off, telling Lisa he doesn't like her going out because there's a killer on the loose. Man, good one, pal. Like you said, Brian, this man wants, he wants to have his cake and eat it too. You got to pick one or the other, brother. I say this respectfully, Woody is very good in the show, but Matthew is definitely the star in my opinion. He schools Marty in this scene about the scent of his wife's genitalia and applying pressure to his wrist. Chess, not checkers over here for Rust. And this is the last thing I got. I laughed at Marty sniffing his fingers as Rust goes back into the mechanic shop and layeth the smackdown on them to jog their memory where the whorehouse is. Another good set of scenes, if you ask me.
Yeah, so Marty cheats on his fine-ass wife. Unbelievable. But then when we see who it's with, like you said, Nico, I'm not saying I condone, but I understand. When Rust is driving and the lights are zooming in, zooming by him, it reminded me of the time that I hit my friend's vape pen at Rooster's. I thought it was just a regular vape. Turns out it was a dab pen. I felt like I was flying a fucking spaceship all the way home. I don't do the weeds, brother, and that's a prime example of why. Anyway, very valid point by Marty when he asks, what good is cake if you can't eat it? I've always hated that damn expression. It makes no fucking sense. Good tension in the locker room between Rust and Marty. Marty's guilt got the best of him, and Rust showed how good his detective work was. I thought that was really good shit there. Then, just badass stuff from Rust when he whoops ass in the garage. Hell yeah, brother. Good set of scenes again, but really hard to take notes on, and not much actually happened, I don't think.
Yeah. The two arrive at the ranch, where they're greeted by a group of girls who quickly back off because of them being cops. They stop and talk to Jan, the brothel's madam, and is overheard by another sex worker named Beth, played by Lily Simmons, who was on the show previously in Bone Tomahawk, don'tgoother.com. After a brief talk, Beth leaves, and Marty confronts Jan about Beth not being 18. Jan tells him she was abused and questions his, quote, morality about the situation. Beth gives him Dora Lange's bag, and they find a diary mentioning the Yellow King in Carcosa. They find a yellow flyer for the church, and Marty says they should go after the weekend. Cutting back to the 2012 interview, Russ tells the detectives he spent time in a psychiatric hospital in 93, national champions, Florida State, then tells a story of how his daughter Sophia was killed and how he transferred narco after his wife and he split up. After narrowly surviving a gunfight while undercover, Russ was offered a pension and instead asked to be assigned to the homicide beat and ended up in Louisiana. We then cut to Marty and his father-in-law talking about changing times while Maggie and her mother discuss marital issues, and she passively aggressively agrees for the whole family to head back together. Go ahead, Nico. The next set of scenes is the ending.
We get really good dialogue in this. And like you mentioned, Dustin, there's a lot of good stuff, but is a lot happening. I kind of feel like that with this one because I don't have a lot of notes. So maybe I'm just captivated. I don't know. But we get really good dialogue in this interview scene, capped off with Marty and the lease owner on Beth's life. Where she came from, her choices to make in life. I really liked it. Rust, I couldn't imagine losing my young child and then a divorce. It's interesting to see his character and backstory being told. I think Rust is such a fascinating character. I'm jealous of these kids. I wish I was fishing. I never get to go anymore. It was made me sad a little bit. We get a really weird dynamic with Maggie's parents. She seems to have issues with her mother, and her pops definitely doesn't seem to care for Marty at all. And this is the last thing I got, Dustin. Maggie gives a look that could kill. You can definitely tell there's some marital issues between her and Marty, and I wonder if anything comes about that.
Facts.
See, you already know. You said something earlier. makes me wonder, like you saying that she was giving old boy the fuck me eyes at dinner. I ain't really even pick up on that. It makes me think I'm missing something.
But I have no idea, brother.
What is this? Some kind of hillbilly bunny ranch? You may want to talk to the sheriff before you start tossing accusations around. Oh, I got no problem with hillbillies. That was hilarious to me. Yeah, it's like, that's great lines. Quite the conversation between Marty and the pimp lady about women's rights and hooking. I'll leave it alone, as it's not my place to be in women's business as a man, but it was really good dialogue. Gut-wrenching to hear how Russ' daughter died. Man, I could not imagine. That is sad. Great visual effects when the cloud in the clouds after Russ was talking about his PTSD. Solid way to show things from his perspective and what he experiences. And then, am I the only one who got nervous seeing those little girls standing up in the boat with no life jackets on? I didn't like that at all, man. Like, I get it. That water's probably not very deep. They could probably swim. But still, that I was just on edge. This is another solid set of scenes, though. Kind of expect that trend to continue. So, probably going to say that after every set of scenes.
Well, you only got to say it one more time, my man, because this the end. We open with Russ Red Ford pulling up to what appears to be a rundown closed bar as he gets out and walks down the street holding his ledger. He canvasses the neighborhood to no prevail, and we see him later that night continuing the search with the sex workers. We cut to Marty and Maggie arguing over making dinner and drinks, and Marty makes a dire mistake, telling her that she is wallowing in self-pity and to leave him alone while he tries to do his job. Woof! She calls him a chicken shit, and he hits her with a low blow about her mother. When he goes to get his two girls for dinner, he notices their Barbies set up like a gangbang, and we hear a 2012 voiceover from Russ talking about what his daughter was spared by not growing up in this world and how he was spared the sin of being a father, which was very hard to hear. Back at the precinct, the major introduces the two to the new police task force Tuttle had mentioned creating before. Russ makes some smart-ass remarks, and the major busts their balls for the smart mouth and tells Russ to shut the fuck up. The two find Lang's church, and it turns out it had been destroyed in a fire. As they inspect it, they find a drawing of a woman with an antler crown staged in a similar position to Lang. What do you think of the ending, Nico?
All right, I got to ask you guys if you agree with my first comment. I thought Jigsaw would 100% put Russ into a trap. I can hear the tape now. You never recovered from your daughter's death, your wife's divorce. You obsess over other people's cases because you hate your own life. You drink because you to escape. Like, can y'all hear that shit? Like, I can hear that. Like,
yeah,
like Russ is like
totally, totally fucked up too. But yeah, he could.
I can just see it. Yep, there it is. Maggie and Marty are fighting. My man Marty knows he fucked up bringing up her mother's thoughts on her. That was definitely a low blow. Horrifying, like you mentioned, Brian, horrifying setup of dolls Marty finds his kids playing with. My goodness, girls, what happened to tea parties? Jesus Christ. Quesada snaps on my guy, Rust. We don't want him here. Shut the fuck up. Keep your opinions to yourself. Damn, brother, you must need that paycheck or you must really love solving crimes because I would not work for that guy. More beautiful nature shots and Rust, like you mentioned, Dustin, in the last scene. This line cracked me up when he's talking about tents typically do move. That shit cracked me up. Nice holy shit moment seeing the painting on the wall of the burned down church with a woman with horns. Man, I thought it was a really good ending to the episode.
Yeah, when Marty is arguing with Maggie, I couldn't help but notice a bottle of the finest whiskey in the world on the counter. Shout out to John Jameson and Son. Man has good taste. His parenting may need some help, though. The hell kind of make-believe with those girls playing with those dolls? They have Barbie laid out butt-ass naked with one doll kneeled over her and the other standing around like there was a gangbang going on at Al's Toy Barn. The fuck have those kids been watching on TV? Then it's common in shows and movies for a cop to get chewed out by their superior, Rush Hour, Bad Boys, and countless others. But this is one of the better ones I've seen. Quesada ripped them a new one, and it was very entertaining. Mm-hmm. How many ways are there for me to say, shut the fuck up? That's an all-timer. Then Rust raised his hand to speak. Like, I love that scene. It was so funny to me. Seeing the painting of the woman in the antlers on the church wall was a great revelation to end on. Perfect cliffhanger. And you can feel them getting closer with every step they take. I loved it.
Okay. Dustin, do you have anything on this one?
I do not.
When the detectives stop their car outside the abandoned church, there's a shot of Russ looking at the horizon when suddenly a group of blackbirds take flight from the bushes. As the old Russ voices over the scene, the group of birds start making random patterns in the sky, one of which is a spiral sign as seen tattooed on the murdered victims' backs. And these two episodes have an 8.9 and an 8.8 respectively on IMDb.
Well, I gave them both a 9 if you're curious.
I was curious.
I gave them both a 9, brother.
I do got a couple social media comments we'll read real quick. we'll go over to Instagram first. Y'all go follow us, DGOT the series. We really appreciate it. Laughing Man 45 commented, "This was a great story and a real messed up ending." It was. It was. All right, we'll jump over to Facebook now. Becky Johnson commented, "Yes," with five S's. So she's excited.
Becky Johnson's from the Too Close to Home podcast as well.
That's right. She is. Shout out to Becky. Joe Swinford, another top fan, commented, "Yes," with 1, 2, 3, 4, a bunch of S's at the end of it. First season was legit with the this emoji. So that was really cool. And then another big fan of the show, Michelle Merzer, commented, "Yes, the first season is really good." So, yeah, the fans are loving it. Dustin, you got any fun facts or anything you want to shout out?
No, shout out to my personal accounts. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't see any comments on X or anything, so no.
All right, guys. Really good first two episodes. Brian, appreciate you doing the scene by scene. You know,
thank you, sir.
Kind of a little bit of a bitch when it comes to doing scene by scene on stuff I've never seen before with these TV series, just because I know we take them real serious and we want to do well on them. Brian, you want to go ahead and go give your thoughts on the episodes? And okay.
I kind of already said my thoughts on it, man. I think they're great, but as two standalone episodes, I'm kind of surprised to hear, Dustin, you gave it a 9. I mean, I know there are some funny parts, and it does keep you engaged jumping back and forth from 2012 to 1995. Like, I think that's smart doing it like that, you know, to keep you engaged, because these episodes were very slow, but obviously very, very needed.
Oh, I was just going to say, so I gave them a 9. The reason they weren't higher is because not much happened, really. Like, we established what's going on, but nothing groundbreaking happened.
Well, I thought you'd go lower, is what I'm saying.
No, I gave them as high as it did because the acting was so well done. The writing was so well done. The dialogue was perfect. The atmosphere, the tone, like, they changed McConaughey and Harrelson's looks so much that you could tell, like, 17 years had passed. Like, I think that it's really, really good so far. And honestly, I've been debating the past 2 days. Do I want to go ahead and bang this one out? Do I want to finish this? But I'm
finish it. Yeah, do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I chose.
Yeah,
to, I've watched 4 A24 movies the past 2 days instead. So
might as well punch yourself in the balls. But I don't know why you're punishing yourself like that,
dude. It's a good series, man. It's really good.
I want them to come back, especially after revisiting the series. I want them to come back so much and do another season with these two. Because, I mean, as you just heard from these interviews, I mean, they worked together for another, what was it, 7 years or something. There's so many other cases these two could have gone on, and I think it would be awesome to see these two. And plus, they're like best friends in real life anyway. They'd love to do it, I'm sure.
They're brothers.
Well, that's true.
I buy into that. I buy into that, just like Jimmy Butler is Michael Jordan's son. I buy into that, too.
I ain't buying into that, but, I mean, there's a lot of validity in Yeah, let's put it this way. I think it's more likely that they're brothers than we've ever been to the moon.
Agree.
Okay. All right.
Agree. any final thoughts on True Detective season or episode 1 and 2 before I just shout out our blood donors?
No, I appreciate you guys doing it. I'm excited.
Shit, I'm glad you picked this. This was good. I loved it, man. Fuck, man. I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah. Well, I'll talk to you about it later, Brian. All right, shout out our blood donors. Christina Tower, final girl donor. She picked The Mist. We'll be reviewing that in about 10 minutes, actually. Camper Level Reoccurring, Clayton J, Nina, Michelle Mirza, the Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, and Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorn David Phillips, Heather Superdoc, Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home Podcast, and Dana Tucker. We really appreciate y'all. It means a lot. And, yeah, y'all take a big burden off us. It means the world to us that you help us out financially in this really tough times.
Absolutely.
It ain't easy to give up $5 or $10 right now. So, we really appreciate it. Any final thoughts, guys, before we just end the episode? And we'll be back next week for True Detective Season 1, Episode 3 and 4. Boom. Motherfucker. Just want to remind everybody.